Okay, this Shabbos is Parshas Emor. It's the one break we get in 4 weeks where we don't have double Parshas. Emor talks about the laws of Kohanim. In Kedoshim, we were given halachos, how to be Kedoshim to you, how the whole nation should be Kadosh, right? With a large number of details of what should be done, what shouldn't be done. Now the Torah turns to the Kohanim, right? Who are on a higher level because they are required to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu requires a higher standard of Kedusha, holy behavior from the Kohanim.
Hey, Mickey. Good morning.
Morning. So the Pasuk says, V'emar Shem Moshe, Emar l'Kohanim b'nei Aaron, talk to the Kohanim who are Aaron's sons, V'amarto lahem, and let's start to give them the rules, L'nefesh lo yitama b'yamav. You are not allowed to, in general, become tamei from one who has passed. It says, Amor v'yamarta, which in the same pasuk, right? Which would seem to be somewhat of a duplication in that we know the Torah is often quite sparse in words. Ibn Ezra says the first comment was the recitation, he says, of Kedoshim Tihu, and the Kohanim took the role of being teachers and being Tamidei Chachamim, and they would have a special responsibility to guard that the commandments are adhered to by the general population. That's the first one. Then the Amarta, right, is, let me give you now the very special halachas that applies to you. The Ramban says the double use of the basic word emor is to stress the significance, because the passing of individuals is something that happens all the time, and otherwise it would seem somewhat unnatural that Kohanim have got to basically separate themselves from a body. The Rashi in Yavama says, Amar v'amarta is, I'll tell you, and then you have got to teach the later Kohanim. You've got to pass the tradition down. The adult Kohanim were required to keep the young Kohanim away from Tumah from a very young age. They had to know that their role in the world was always to remain aloof from the tumah that was caused by a mace, and hopefully other types of tumah as well. Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch makes a comment. The only reason a Kohen is a Kohen is because of the fact he is a descendant of Aaron a Kohen. This holiness is hereditary. And you've got to be careful that with this heritage, as you pass it down generation to generation, you've got to pass with it the responsibilities. And that's why, again, he says it's critical that young children know the rules. So, we're told that a Kohen cannot become Tamei to the general population, but there are exclusions. The Torah says to the seven closest relatives you have, mother, father, brother, sister, Rachmana Litzlan, son or daughter, and wife, you have a mitzvah, you've got to become Tamei. And Rabbi Lehrfeld mentioned that oftentimes he comes across Kohanim who don't even realize that this is the case. And he says, this is because they are B'nai Aharon. The very fact that you are a Kohen came from your lineage. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to give proper Kavod Aharon to your lineage. And there's one Kohen who is not permitted to become Tamei at all, and that is the Kohen Gadol. Nevertheless, we're told that should HaKohen Gadol come across a Mace Mitzvah, a body in a field with no one else around to bury it, and we could be afraid that someone might steal it, animals might eat it, etc. A Kohen, even if he's on his way to the Beis HaMikdash on Erev Yom Kippur to do the Avoda, is required to stop, bury the mace, and become Tamei. And what is the reason? The Rav explained that because every Yid is a Tzelem Elohim, a somewhat of a representation of a Mom Kadosh Baruch Hu, the kavod the Kohen would be giving to this Beis Mitzvah is reflection of the fact that this is a Tzelem Elohim, and I'm only doing this to keep what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to me. And even though I will not be able to do the Avodah on Yom Kippur, and the substitute Kohen Gadol will have to do it, that's the mitzvah. And the point is often brought out in cases like these. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a priority of mitzvahs. If we were left on our own to try to prioritize what's more important, we might think that attaining forgiveness for all of Klal Yisroel definitely has to push away dealing with one body in the field. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, that's not what I want. And that's always something that's got to be borne in mind, that we are not to prioritize which mitzvahs come first. We have rules, and we have to ask a posek how, in fact, they apply. The Rav said that there is a mistaken concept of what a mace mitzvah is. And he says, very often, the Jewish burial here in Staten Island will call the shul and say, we need a minyan because it's a mace mitzvah. And he says, that's not a mace mitzvah. Having a minyan is very nice for a levaya, but it's not required. All that's required is that someone be buried under the supervision of a yid. And he says, there are times when a rav has got to stand by the side and almost alone and only with someone who is a non-Jewish, you know, grave digger, and that's fine too. He says, no, that's not, he says, once the rav is there, it's no longer a meis mitzvah. And then he told a story from the days of the stipler in the 60s in Eretz Yisroel. In the 60s in Eretz Yisroel, there, he says, that's when the Israeli medical schools were starting, and they had a need for cadavers. They needed deceased people's bodies for medical studies, etc. But the problem was, of course, that halacha says you have to bury a meis. You can't give your body to science. I think you're allowed to, and according to many poskim, give organs, right, to a living person. But the notion that the whole body can be cut apart, right, to study is totally usher. And he told the story that in Bnei Brak, a Holocaust survivor, a woman who lived alone and had very little to do with anyone because she was one of those tremendously broken people who just basically survived to breathe and eat after the Holocaust. And people knew her a bit. She would say Tillim, she would daven, but she was really a recluse because whatever reason, she was unfortunately psychologically damaged, and she was nifter. And so she had someone who checked in on her every day, a neighbor, and when she didn't see her that day, at the end of the day she went, and unfortunately she found the body, and she called the Bnei Brak Chevra Kedisha. And the law, like in America, is they had to find a doctor to sign a death certificate. And when the doctor got there and he found out that she had no attachment, no family, no nothing, he said, ah, thank God I found the cadaver. And he got on the phone and he called one of the hospitals, I have a donation for you. And when the people realized, a kol kore went out in Bnei Brak. And within about 20 minutes, there were 300-400 people there, and no one was going through. And as they called, more and more came. And the rabbi says when the ambulance got there, there were thousands of people, including what he called the frum who aren't afraid to get into altercations. And they basically precluded anybody from getting into the street where she was. And a number of the people took the mace, carried her themselves probably on, you know, some type of stretcher or whatever, and brought her with throngs, with thousands of people to the Beis Olam. And she had a levaya with thousands of people. And everybody realized that there must have, Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted this. So they went to the stipler, and they asked, do you know what schus this woman had? And he said, really, I don't know. But he says, I'm going to ask my mother, who I think knew her before the war and after. And he went to the Rebbetzin, and she said, when we were in the ghetto, wherever it was, people would try to get out to get a piece of bread or whatever, and they'd be shot on the spot. And you can be sure that nobody ever took these bodies and gave them any respect. Rather, they would let them rot. They wanted to show the Jews what would happen. And he said, unfortunately, there were people who preferred to die on the spot in the ghetto and get buried in the ghetto rather to end up being cremated after going through the gas chambers. And he said, his mother said, this girl, when she was young, she was blonde and blue-eyed, and so was her sister. And every night, and I don't know how they did it, these two young girls would sneak out and would bring Mason, people who were shot, brought their bodies from outside the ghetto into the ghetto so they could be buried appropriately. And the stipler said, now I understand. Here was someone who, when she was of proper mind, was very, very careful to make sure that a Yid had proper kvura. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore, gave her the proper kavod achron, having thousands and thousands of people protect her body and bringing her to a proper kvura. We're told that when a kohen can become tamei to a sister, it's a sister who is still single. I believe, right?
Virgin.
Huh? Go ahead.
A virgin.
I'm trying to find the word. Okay. You may very well, hold on, where is it saying? Achoisei Hapsula, right. Akroiva love, his virgin sister, Asher Loi Hoysa Leish, who never had relations with a man, Loyitoma. And then it says, Loyitoma Balbi Amov Lehecha Loi. A husband amongst his people, is who's a Koyan, cannot contaminate himself to one who desecrates him. And this is unfortunately the case, that where a kohen marries an inappropriate woman, he marries a grusha or a chalutza, right? Any children they have become chalolim, they're disqualified, and he is not allowed to be metamai himself if that woman passes away. We have again the commandment that they are not allowed to make bald spots on their heads. They can't shave the edge of their beard. And in their flesh, they cannot gash with, right? They can't do these things in the way of mourning. And we're always told that they've got to be holy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They cannot be mechalel. They cannot desecrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. They are required to always be in a position to eat the karbonos that are required and are brought in the Beis HaMikdash. They eat lechem eloi kehem, the very bread, the very food of the Ribbono Shel Olam, v'hayu kodesh. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm reiterating once again, they've got to be holy.
Are most of these laws for Israel as well? just for Kohanim?
I didn't catch. Again?
Are these laws?
These laws apply to Kohanim. No, these laws.
For all Jews.
Oh, only to Kohanim. You know, the Gadol HaDor, the Stipler went, right? Rav Auerbach, they all went to Leviathan. You know?
No. But I'm talking about making a cut.
No, we have, yeah, this, right. So,
is that
right.
Only for Kohanim?
No. This is, right? These rules apply to everyone, and they're mentioned, right, first in Kedoshim for everyone, and they're mentioned here again with respect to Kohanim.
Why?
That's a good question. I'm trying to see if it says any. It says, the Klayokar says that one may have thought that when a Kohen dies, there is a significant vacuum in a Kodesh Baruch Hu's complete community, and maybe that would allow for an additional type of mourning. This type, now why they would pick that, like he says, for example, maybe they won't shave, but they'll use, what do they call it? A debilatory, you know, one of those creams or whatever. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I've given you one set of laws whenever someone is nifter, and you're never to be, as they say, holier than the Almighty. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want you to do these things. And so even though you may feel that it's the most tragic loss possible, God forbid the Kohen Gadol died, I can't take it, I've got to cut myself, you're not allowed to. You've got to stay within the boundaries of Halacha, right? Even in the most difficult of times.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
And we're told that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Zoyna or a Chalola, someone who has inappropriate lineage. So, what is a Zoyna? And the rabbi has told this a number of times. And he said it's very applicable, especially in today's day and age. We know that generally not yet Orthodox Jews have a different standard when it comes to sexual relations. And the norm in college is normally that you have a significant other, a lover. That's the way it is today. A woman who did that in college, okay, and especially if the individual wasn't Jewish, and it may only be when the guy is not Jewish, she's given the halacha of a zona. Now, it doesn't matter that if she later becomes a balas tshuva and she wants to get married, we have no problems. The only problem we have is if she wants to marry a kohen because of this very halacha. And the Rav tells the story of a case which actually happened. They were both Balei Tshuva, and they did get married, and they didn't know anything. And then when they became more knowledgeable, they realized that was their marriage in jeopardy? Was it an illegal marriage or not? Here they had kids already in yeshivas, and they asked the Kohen, how do you know that you're a Kohen? And he said, he says, I'll be honest with you. I'm fourth generation Reform, whatever that means. Okay. I know my mother was Jewish, no problem. But I never heard the word Kohen in Temple Emmanuel in my life. You know, maybe you read the word if you ever read scripture, but nobody knew what it was. My father didn't do it. His father didn't do it. One day, I went to an old cemetery, and I found the grave of my great-grandfather. And I saw on it the hands. We know that on the tombstone of a Kohen, you often find two hands signifying duchening. And he said, I had no idea what that was. And someone explained to me, he might have been a Kohen, but it doesn't mean anything. Just because he was doesn't mean you are. And the rabbi asked, do you know anything about it? He says, yeah, he was a Reform Jew. He was in Temple Emmanuel or some other temple. And the rabbi said, in that case, we can't assume that he's a Kohen. They never knew what the heck they were doing. And so if that's the only way you think you're a Kohen, we're going to assume you're not. You've never duchened, and we're telling you never will. And in that way, the marriage was saved. Okay.